Welcome to today's podcast. Our show today is going to be about the overthrow of Republicans in Congress. And more specifically, the Republican propaganda machine in Karl Rove. We'll talk a lot about what's been happening the past 6, 8, 10 years. And Republican strategy for maintaining control over this country. And what went wrong with Republicans. The brilliant strategist Karl Rove couldn't pull off this election. I think the Republicans felt that they were going to be empowered indefinitely. And they conducted themselves like they were going to be in power indefinitely. The way they've conducted things since they've had control of Congress has been, they've been conducting themselves like they've been bullies on the block, basically. And if you disagree with them, you're unpatriotic. If you disagree with them, you're a terrorist. And that has come to an end. I think the American people have finally seen the light at the end of the tunnel. And seen the direction that this country was going. Maybe it would be more accurate to say there was no light at the end of the tunnel. So, it's a good day. Democrats have the Senate and House of Representatives. Now we'll just have to wait and see if they can do anything about it, changing the direction that this country is going. The Republican propaganda machine has been so powerful and so strong that the word liberalism now is sort of a bad word. It's a bad name. If you call somebody a liberal, it's like calling them a jerk. It's like calling them an idiot. That's what the word sort of means now because of what the Republicans have been able to do in their attacks against liberals, attacks against the Democrats. It's become a bad word to the point where nobody wants to be called a liberal anymore. You know, if you turn on the radio, there's 3 or 4 or 5, just about every talk show is a conservative talk show. They have their own news network and Fox Network. And for a long time, they've been convincing people that their way is the right way. And you can't disagree with these people on these shows because if you disagree with them, they attack you and they call you an idiot, basically. So, and it's worked. People have been convinced by this propaganda machine. And it's taken the fact that the state of our country has gotten so bad. You know, the national deficit is over $8 trillion. And we're racking up hundreds of billions of dollars in money that we don't have in debt every year under the Bush administration. And we keep being told that no, that's not a problem. It's not a big deal. You know, the Republicans have always called the Democrats tax and spend. Well, the Republicans have been cut and spend. Now, when you tax and spend, at least you are balancing the budget. When you cut and spend, you're not reducing the spending. But you're reducing the income, so you're running up the debt. And that's what the Republican Congress have done under the leadership of President Bush for his 2 terms in office. So I hope that one of the first things that the Democrats are going to do is make sure that the next budget begins to reduce and address this massive spending issue that we have in this country. It is really hard. It has been really hard for the Democrats to compete in this system where no matter what you do, you're going to be attacked by this Republican propaganda mechanism that's been in place. And it's unfortunate that it's taken the fact that our country has just run into problem after problem to finally put a stop to this machine. I mean, the machine hasn't stopped, but it's failed in the sense that they could not maintain control of the Congress. You know, one of the interesting things about the support that Republicans have had in the past, they've really had a strong support from the Southern Christian right. And it's all that support has really kind of boiled down to the issue of abortion and the issue of moral values. And those have been the two issues that I believe that the Southern Christian right has voted on. But the interesting thing is, the Republicans, though they support the repeal of Roe versus Wade, they really don't want to see it repealed, because that would galvanize the opposition against the Republican Party. So even though the Christian right has supported the Republicans on that issue, they have really done nothing, and they will do nothing. They don't want to do anything to reverse that decision, because they know they're going to lose even more power. Well, when they had power, they know that that would have been an issue where they would have been voted completely out on. So, but in the South, you know, is generally, you know, they're not, the poorest states are in the South. And, you know, generally economically, the South doesn't do as well as some of the northern states. You would think that those Christian right voters would vote for issues having to do with taking care of the poor, protecting the environment, and so on, you know, democratic issues here. But based on those two issues of moral values and abortion, mostly abortion, they've stabbed themselves in the back because they're not seeing any progress in those areas. And they're not going to see any progress in those areas. And at the same time, they're watching the wealthy get tax cuts. They're watching their families being driven into debt because they can't afford health care. Or if they get in a hospital and they're uninsured, they're racking up massive amounts of debt. The credit cards are racking up. Their family debt is racking up. There hasn't been any services for these people, for the middle class. For the middle class people. And you know, these are also issues that you would think that the Christian right would be voting with. But you know, they focus in on an issue of abortion that is not gonna, it's not gonna be overturned. So it just always puzzled me why the southern states always vote very conservative, with the conservatives on those issues. It just doesn't make sense. And of course, the Democrats have been now labeled as being anti-morality, which is I don't believe is true. And I think it will be clearer now that we have a lot of Democrat moderates that were elected this time around who are not going to be, you know, extreme one way or the other, which I think is good. I think it's about time we had a more moderate center in the Congress. Gears a little bit. I'll start with a little bit of a disclaimer. I am not an expert, and I don't know if there really is such a thing as a political expert. If you are a political expert, it's because you're an expert at BS and spin, basically, and that's what it boils down to. Listening to Mr. Hannity and his show and Mr. Limbaugh, it's just nothing but BS. From these so-called experts, they're experts at jamming a bunch of baloney down your throat. So I am not an expert. What you hear is an opinion, and you may agree, you may disagree, and I'm open to hearing your feedback, and I will include it on the show if you choose to leave such feedback when I can. I'd like to talk a little bit about some of my political positions so you can get an idea of where I'm coming from. I agree more, I guess, in general with the Democrats, but when it comes to spending, I'd probably consider myself a fiscal conservative. I don't believe that we should be spending money that we don't have. And I also don't support an inexorbitant amount of spending on programs for people who basically do nothing but sit on their butts and don't want to work, don't want to go out and get a job. The state that I live in has such a great welfare program that people from all over the country move to my state in order to take advantage of the programs that we have here. I see this perspective as an apartment owner. I see people who have been collecting money from the state for years and haven't worked a full-time job since as long as they can remember. The more kids they have, the more money they get, and that's sort of how the system is set up. You have a child and you want to immediately have another one because you're going to get more money from the state. You can't make enough staying at home if you don't have more than one kid, and that's how our system is. So if it was me, if I was governor, I would say, well, one mistake and you're off. You know, it's a mistake to have a kid when you can't afford to have a kid. So we'll work with you on one mistake, but more than one, you're off. That's just my opinion. Too much hard-working middle-class money is going to support people who are very capable and very able to support themselves, but choose not to. And unfortunately, there are people who really need those programs, and we need to do a better job of sorting through who really needs it and who really needs to get off their butt and get out and get a job, basically. I really think that, you know, if you have, from a state perspective, I'd rather see the state support, have a child care program, and any money that they get is contingent upon them getting out and working. And any money is an augment to the money that they're bringing in. And we'll support, we'll provide you with child care, but you got to go out and work. And if you can't get a job, you can do something for the state for free. And if you lose your job because you're too darn lazy, then you lose your money, basically, until you find yourself another job. It sounds harsh, but and extreme. I agree, but something needs to be done because there are just too many people making a living not working, and people who can work, and they have no motivation to work and no motivation to get off the system. That's the problem. When it comes to gun control, I don't believe that the government should be controlling guns. And when it comes to that issue, everybody says, well, we need guns for the sportsmen. I don't support that for that reason. I don't hunt. I don't care about people hunting. I don't want people hunting in my backyard. But guns, the right to bear arms is not, was never put in place for sportsmen. It wasn't, that wasn't the reason it was put there. The reason the right to bear arms was put in place was it was really a right to revolution. You have a right to raise up arms against your government if things get so off track and so wrong. And that's a right that needs to be protected under all circumstances. We have enough laws on the books now, if we just enforce them and get the guns out of the hands of criminals, we'd be a lot further ahead. But I don't believe that that guns should be kept out of the hands of law-abiding citizens. And the argument that it's for the hunters, I don't agree with that argument. It's for the right to revolution. That is why we have the right to bear arms. When it comes to just about any civil rights issue, I side on the civil rights end of it. The Patriot Act is the unpatriotic act, really. And when it came out, it's funny that the supporters of the Patriot Act would accuse everyone else who didn't support it as being unpatriotic. Well, it's quite opposite. We have rights. We have rights for a reason. We live in a country that values freedom, and freedom has a price. It has a high price. You can't have freedom in maximum security. It just isn't going to work. You have to sacrifice a little bit of security in order to have your freedoms. So giving too much control over to the government as far as their ability to snoop into our lives is going to limit down freedom. And the way some of the laws associated with the Patriot Act are being used has nothing to do with fighting terrorists. It has to do with fighting anyone who disagrees with the point of view of the people in power. I believe in pro-choice. And I also would support stem cell research. As far as pro-choice goes, it's just a position that I have. I don't want to legislate my point of view onto somebody else. I believe that people should be educated before they make such decisions, and I wouldn't support an abortion in my own family as far as, you know, if my wife was pregnant, I would want her to have the baby. But it's up to the individual woman, and it should be. It's. I'm not going to legislate what I think is right for somebody else. I'm not self-righteous enough to legislate, be able to legislate that. Then I won't step over that line. But there are plenty of people who want to. So, I probably overall lean towards a more liberal end, but a lot of my views are quite conservative. As far as issues of immigration, you know, I think we ought to be sealing up the border, and I think people who are here illegally need to go back to their countries, and people who, you know, people who do stay need to start paying taxes and start paying for the programs that they're benefiting from. But the first thing we've got to do is secure our border. And we're talking about national security and all this stuff that we're doing in the wake of 9/11. And we haven't even secured our own southern border. What's the point of spending all this money if we're not even going to secure the southern border? It's wide open, and any terrorist who wants, for a couple hundred bucks, can get somebody to bring them across that border, and they can bring whatever they want with them. So I don't see how you can even begin to address the issue of national security if you don't address the southern border. It just doesn't make sense. So that's a little bit of my, in general, of my positions. So you can take it, you know, as it is. Let's talk about national health care. This is a situation that has just gotten way out of hand. Middle-class Americans can't afford it unless it's paid for completely by businesses, and businesses cannot afford to pay 100% of the premiums. Every year, policies have been going up. You know, if it goes up 7%, that's considered a good year for healthcare inflation. It can go up 10, 15%, even higher at times. It's out of control. And the Republican Congress has done absolutely nothing to curtail the cost of medical insurance, the rates that they're going up. And do I think we should have a national healthcare system? It could be a possibility in the future. I think there are some things that we can do now immediately to get control of the costs. And we've got to address the costs first before we can even think about a national healthcare system. For example, with prescription drugs, the fact that the prescription drug companies can sell their drugs to Canada for a lot cheaper than they're letting us have them for, even though they're made right in their country. Or some of them are made right in their country. Some of them are made with funds that have been provided by the government as far as the research of these drugs has gone. And they go to Canada, and Canadians can buy them for cheaper. That's outrageous. And I cannot believe that nothing has been done about this for years. And still nothing has been done about this. And I hope that the Democratic-run Congress is going to take some steps and do something about the cost of prescription drugs. That would be one of the first steps I would want to see taken. And then there has to be something to address the cost of these skyrocketing premiums. My wife was in the hospital when she had her baby, and it was just, you know, a doctor comes into your room, looks at you for 5 minutes, and you get a $150 charge. For 5 minutes. Now, what is... That's outrageous. I mean, if you're going to charge $150, I want $150 worth of service. Now, I understand that the person is, you know, qualified, went to medical school, but, I mean, if your rate's $150 an hour and you see somebody for 5 minutes, it's not right to charge insurance company $150. It just doesn't... It doesn't match up. There's a lot of, you know, I think there's a lot of extortion. I think that's extortion. And I think a lot of that is going on when you talk about medical care. My wife is from Peru, and when we've gone down to Peru, you go into a doctor's office and you actually see a doctor. Here in the United States, you go into a doctor's office and you're lucky if you see a doctor. 9 times out of 10, you're going to see a nurse practitioner. What the cost is, you get charged the same amount and you're not even seeing a doctor. So the system cannot continue the way it is. And we think, oh, we've got this great healthcare system. It's not so great. It is not the best healthcare system in the world. And certainly, if you don't have access to it, it's not the best healthcare system in the world. So there has to be some work done to reduce the cost of the healthcare system in the United States. And that needs to be done probably before we can even think about nationalizing healthcare. because if you nationalize healthcare and you have nothing that is going to help control the costs, the skyrocketing costs of it, it's going to absolutely fail 100%. But it's, and I don't think addressing this is really a tough issue to address. I mean, there's a lot that can be done to reduce the costs immediately, and starting right with prescription drugs, and the costs that were being gouged to buy these drugs by prescription drug companies. Well, there you have it. That's all I have for today. Thank you for taking time to listen, and check back again, and I may have another podcast up.